Hey everyone, it's me, Reed Galen. As you may have noticed, I don't host the Lincoln Project podcast anymore, but I'm so excited to share with you my brand new show, The Homefront. On The Homefront, you'll get the same incisive discourse about the pro-democracy movement from the smartest, most driven people in the fight today. If you're listening to this episode on the Lincoln Project podcast channel, I invite you to subscribe to The Homefront on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows. I want to say thank you to all of you in the pro-democracy movement, and I look forward to continuing our American journey together. And now, The Homefront. Welcome to The Homefront. I'm your host, Reed Galen. Today, I'm joined by two of my favorite members of the pro-democracy movement, Olivia Troy and Joe Walsh. Olivia is the former Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor to Vice President Mike Pence, is the executive director of the bipartisan gun safety organization 97%, author of the We Lived It Substack newsletter, and a proud member of the Republicans for Harris movement. Today, she's coming to us from Washington, D.C. Olivia, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Joe is a former member of Congress, former candidate for president, former Republican, and current host of the podcast Social Contract with Joe Walsh. Joe is also coming to us from Washington. Joe, welcome back.
Reed, Olivia, good to be with you both.
All right, gang. So here we are. We're like 7 weeks out, I think, as of today. And Olivia, I'll start with you. The reason why I wanted to get you guys on was because, you know, look, we probably all spend too much time on social media, but I haven't seen more former Republicans on social media out there for the good fight. So Olivia, tell us, I saw the last place you were was in, looked like Mesa, Arizona. So tell us how the road is.
I think this movement has definitely gained momentum. I remember the first Zoom rally that we did for Republicans for Harris, and Joe Walsh spoke at it. I was one of the moderators for it, and we had over 70,000 people attend that Zoom, which I think for all of us, we were like, this is a great start, great kickoff. I think what was really inspiring is just sort of what's happening at the state level and at the ground level in these battleground states that we're focused on in terms of the growing movement where Republicans really are coming together and independents and saying, you know, we are going to take a stand against this. And I was just in Arizona with Mayor Giles, who is incredible. He's the current mayor of Mesa, who also spoke at the DNC. And, you know, we had a packed house. And I think what was really inspiring that night was just the sense of community, I think, that's important that is happening here with, you know, I know Joe has been traveling at Pennsylvania and other places. It's sort of like a sense of belonging again, where people are like, I don't feel completely isolated as someone who identifies as a lifelong Republican or traditional conservative, but doesn't identify with MAGA at all. And I think that I think was the most powerful thing that I felt in the most recent event was just, you know, walking into the room and being like, wow, I haven't felt like I was with normal Republicans surrounded by them in a really long time, right? Normally you walk in and it's like, if MAGA is there, you get ostracized. And I think is a powerful thing about this movement. I don't know what Joe's seen, but I do think that they, you know, they mentioned Joe Walsh, they mentioned the different people, and they say, you know, it's really helpful to see this movement coming together and this sort of permission structure that's being created for us to be able to say enough.
So, Joe, you were we were both in Pennsylvania, I think, the last few days. I think you were over in Lancaster, which is sort of south central PA. So tell us, I mean, you've been on the road not only, you know, the last few weeks, but you've also done some traveling with Fred Guttenberg, whose daughter Jamie was killed at Parkland, who is the mensch of all mensches. Right. There's nobody. I've never met a better guy than Fred. But tell us how you what was Lancaster like and where else you've been?
I'd echo, Reed, everything Olivia just said. There's something going on. Now, I say that believing right now, and maybe you two disagree with me, if the election were held tomorrow, I think the unfit man would still win. I think this thing is really close. But there's something going on out there on the ground. Every state I've been in, I've been blown away by the number of Republicans who've come up to me and said, Joe, I'm going to vote for her. And maybe Olivia gets some of this too. But I got a number of people in every state I've been in who've said, I'm not going to say that publicly, but I'm going to vote for her. And they get a big high five. They get a big hug as well. It takes a lot of courage to do what people like Olivia and I have done. But it takes more courage for some of these local Republicans to come out. to stand in the public square and say, I'm a Republican and I'm supporting her. They live in that community. They stay in that community. So I've been blown away as well by the courage that these local Republicans have displayed. I think there is something going on the ground. This is going to be a close electoral race. So if we can help, as Olivia said, encourage a few thousand Republicans in each of these battleground states to come out for Kamala Harris, that'll make a difference.
Well, let me give you the other end of the spectrum. When you knock on a MAGA man's door, hey, this is not a nice guy. Guys, this is not a nice guy. And me and my colleagues got chased around on Sunday, you know, by a guy who clearly had been drinking, called us every name in the book, mooned us, threatened to get a shotgun. It was pretty clear that this was a guy who, you know, was the neighborhood bully too, right? You know, I mean, it was one of those things where I'm glad to hear that you are seeing and hearing and feeling what you're seeing. Because in some of these, you know, Trumpier areas, more Republican areas in places like the Lehigh Valley or Upper Bucks County, you know, I will say this is that I think, Joe, you're right. I mean, we did talk to a few people who were going to vote for Vice President Harris. But also, you know, even the one guy who wanted a Harris yard sign, there were four or five Trump yard signs on his street. He took it inside. He didn't want us to put it in his lawn. Right. And I think that is one thing, is that the intensity I saw from the MAGA people I encountered was, you know, red line. Right. I mean, it went from intensity to insanity. And the folks who are supporting Vice President Harris and Governor Waltz, I think it's a much more quiet sort of support. And so that, to your point, Joe, I think that's the thing that both, you know, concerned me, frankly, was that, like, you know, to your point, like, Trump's people are going to show up. People are going to show up, and we can't deny that. I have said this since the beginning of the year, right? I do think that there are more, even that when it was Joe Biden, that there are more voters available to Biden and now Harris than there are to Trump. But that means they all got to get out. Of course, when we went to the University of Pittsburgh campus, right, like that was like, you know, happiness and light. So looked like a lot of folks there, you know, a lot of kids were registered. A lot of kids were planning to vote. But, you know, one interesting thing, Olivia, too, that I noted was that whether or not it was college kids or at the doors, not a ton of people, at least in Pennsylvania, and I'm going to be in most of the other states between now and Election Day, not a ton of people planning to vote by mail. In fact, people actively saying, oh, no, I'm going to go to the polling place, which I thought was an interesting development. And I wonder if that's a little bit downstream of, you know, of now 4 years of Trump saying it's rigged or whatever it else, or people not trusting it. But I think it is a broader, you know, even if it's just the tendrils of that, right? Just the, well, I'm not sure if I believe it, I'm not sure if my vote will count kind of stuff, which I think also speaks to probably just a civic education piece as well.
Yeah, no, and I think that's actually a really critical point, because I sat next to a younger guy on the flight back from Arizona, who's in his mid-20s, and we ended up talking about the election, and he said to me, he's like, well, why should I vote? Why does it matter? And I think, to me, that was striking, right? Because I think there is a lot of effort to get out the vote from the youth, and I think it's critically important that we are paying attention to college campuses. But that, to me, was striking. And so we had a discussion. It turned out that he wasn't actually a Trump supporter. He was from Iran, and he had very strong viewpoints on what was happening in our country in terms of these narratives on immigration, which was a super interesting conversation to have with him. I think in the end, his take was, well, if I vote, does it really make a difference? And we talked about the slim margin, and he was, you know, so we had a very interesting conversation about whether your vote matters, what happens there. Interestingly enough, after 2 hours of talking to this person on the plane on the way back, halfway through it, I did get a note from him. And he said, you know, you really made me think about the broader picture here of what's happening. And then he's like, and this is an interesting thing. He said, I looked up the Republicans for Harris movement and with the statements. I looked up some of the speeches, and then he ended the note with, thank you for the work that you all are doing. And so I don't know, maybe we changed one mind, right? But I think you're correct. Like, a lot of these narratives that are out there, I mean, they're very real. They resonate with people. And so I think I was not surprised to hear that people are like, yeah, I'm going to vote, but I'm going to make sure my vote counts. I'm showing up in person. Another thing that I'll mention real quick is what y'all are talking about, like the fear of just not putting the signs out or wondering what you're going to get when you knock on doors, I can tell you that fear really is real in Nevada. I just did a Zoom with Nevada volunteers, and I am concerned about what's going on out there. There are a lot of, there's been a lot of like threats against election workers along the way since 2020. And there really is, there are parts of Nevada and the rural areas that are very red. And I could feel the angst of the volunteers and the concern that they had about when they do door knocking, how do they engage? And so that fear is palpable, right? And I know that, you know, both of you understand that very well, you know, and I got to say, as someone who spent my career in national security, it's also just really disheartening because that should be the biggest pride of our democracy, right? Our elections and our civics and just being involved. And it's just hard to hear that, but that's why it's important to continue these conversations that stand by each other.
Right. And Joe, as someone, listen, you've run for office, you've held office. And to Olivia's point, I remember, you know, some conversations I had at the door this past weekend, when I've canvassed before in my career. And, you know, if you find someone who's willing to talk, right, you might get them over the line, but it's 10, 12, 15 minutes. Sometimes they invite you in, right? And so I think that's the one thing too that, you know, I joked with you that I'm not quite in canvas shape. So I got 7 weeks to get into fighting trim here, but that's also like, this is work, right? Like getting out the vote, going door to door, doing these events, like it is an individual conversation with one person, five people, 10 people, 100 people. And I mean, yes, look, we have advertising, we have digital advertising, we have phone calls, but like that, this in-person stuff, like it's intensely personal. It's intense. And it doesn't scale, right? I mean, yes, you could speak to a group of room full of people and you hope it sways them. But at the same time, like, you know, I saw a picture of you sitting with someone in Lancaster, as I mentioned, you know, you got to have that conversation. You got to have that cup of coffee.
It still makes a difference, even in right. These days of social media in which we live. Sitting down one-on-one with a voter makes a difference. I come from MAGA. I used to support Trump. I voted for him in 16. So Reed, to your point, I still engage with these folks every day. And you're right, most of them are unmovable. But there isn't a week that's gone by in the last 6 years since I turned against Trump that I haven't helped a light bulb go off in one MAGA supporter. So it's possible. The other thing that concerns me, though, is, and I think I saw this in Wisconsin a few weeks ago, the number of young men who have bought Trump's bullshit never ceases to amaze me. The hold he's got on young men is broader, I think, than we know. And let's hope he loses and let's make sure he loses. But that's going to be a real concern after this election. He's really hypnotized and helped radicalize swaths of young men in this country. That's something we got to watch for.
Well, but I mean, I think, you know, in speaking of radicalization, I mean, this is something, Olivia, you've known in your professional life is, I mean, this is, we often forget, guys, that this does not occur. You know, what we're experiencing doesn't occur in a vacuum. And before anybody starts jumping up and down about me being both sides here, I'm not being both sides. I'm observing. A friend of mine has a daughter who's in the second year of law school at a, you know, pretty big Southern state school. And what she said was, Joe, to your point, was that the guys in her class aren't necessarily pro-Trump, but they also feel like that Democrats don't want them. That they don't want to have anything to do with them, that they don't, you know, that they think that by definition, you're a young white guy, or maybe you're an old white guy, right? And you don't have anything, you know, there's nothing for you in the movement. And I think that's why the work that y'all are doing and we're doing is so important. But I mean, Olivia, I mean, I could tell you, you know, the radicalized piece, again, we had two guys, right? They were older, but we had two guys chase us this weekend. And then I think to Joe's point too is, I think some of those guys are out there, but again, they have to be willing to call Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, the Democratic Party, at least for this time, home for a minute. And I'm not sure that this current Democratic Party, and again, I say this with all the love in the world for our Democratic friends, I don't know that they have the people or the skill sets outside of folks like us to go talk to young white guys.
No, I think that's going to remain a challenge. And I mean, look, speaking of radicalization, look what's happening to the poor town of Springfield, Ohio.
Yes.
I am so just heartbroken about the ongoing threats. And it hasn't let up. Right? It's not, it wasn't just like one phone call to City Hall and to schools. Like, it is ongoing still. They're canceling festivals right now because of ongoing threats. And that is devastating over these narratives that get pushed out there, right? With that are, you know, false narratives, false accusations. And I think that just speaks to the propaganda machine also on the right and how well they operate together. They row together. I mean, Joe Walsh knows this, right? I mean, Joe can probably be, he's probably one of the best people equipped to defuse it, having lived it and been in it. And so I think that to me is gravely concerning, is how do you sort of reach these younger people, especially that have certainly bought into it. The other thing that I'll say is that I just had a very good friend drop her son off at college because everyone's, you know, back to school. And he sent her a note and, you know, they lean more Democratic in the family. But what he said was, "Mom, I'm meeting a lot of new friends here. All of them, these guys are Trump supporters," to Joe's point. And he said, "They think he's funny." That's what he said. And that's why they like him. So she, you know, responded and said, "Well, are they paying attention about like what the future of the country looks like or whatever?" And they're like, "No, they don't really get into substantive conversations. They just think that the things that he says and the way he behaves to them is just funny. They think he's like a comedian, like almost like, you know, it's ridiculous. And that's why they like him." But think about it. They're talking about someone that could potentially be running the country again, someone that we know is dangerous. Right. But I guess that is sort of what we're up against in terms of how do we navigate in the States and try to like pull these people away from someone like that.
To Olivia's point, and then to the point you made, Reed, about the Democratic Party, look at Springfield, Ohio, or look at any city in America right now, and just take that one issue of immigration. We have a f-ing broken immigration system in this country, and we have for a while. For 3.5 years, Biden and Harris contributed greatly to that problem. Now, Trump and MAGA utterly demagogue the issue and try to scare people, right? There are immigrants committing crime in your neighborhood. They're eating your dogs and your cats. So they lie about it because they're trying to scare voters. Right. But for too long, Democrats have ignored that issue. There are real issues in Springfield, Ohio. And a mature country would deal with it, bring the two sides together. These are great people who came here, these Haitians looking for work and opportunity. Let's make it all work. Democrats have not sufficiently given like an issue like that enough attention, and it's enabled Trump and MAGA to just demagogue the hell out of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, you know, I think this is one thing too, where, you know, as I've often said about when you take on Trump, you don't have to make anything up, right? Whatever it is you say about him, he said out loud, or he's done. And, you know, that's one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, Biden and Harris. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, they tried to fix it. And Trump told the Republicans in the House, no, don't do it. And so turn it back on him, right? Turn it back on them. Let me ask you though, because, you know, of the broader issues, Olivia, that you were talking about, now that we're seeing, you know, we started with Springfield, Ohio, right? And let me just say as an aside, like, I mean, this is J.D. Vance's state. This is where he represents, like, this is the state he represents, right? And, like, it just shows you, like, there's no bottom for these people, right? Like, as I like to say about MAGA, and I think it bears repeating, if you expect the worst from these people, you rarely be disappointed. And so, you know, he's sort of like he's the acolyte here, right? Trump goes out and says something sort of broadly insane, and then J.D. Vance puts the finer points on it. But we're also seeing that they're lying about everything. So now there's yet another, you know, guy with an automatic, well, semi-automatic rifle near Trump at a property, let's be clear, that the Secret Service has been protecting for 8 years, right? Like, it's not like it's the first time he ever played golf there. Again, another former Trump voter. But now, as I was on the plane last night, and for whatever reason, white guys on planes next to me put Fox News on. Just does not fail. And so I'm watching Laura Ingraham, right? And you can read the chyrons, and it's all about Democrats have done this, the rhetoric, right? They're to blame for these people trying to kill Trump. And like, Olivia, as you talked about, that right-wing media machine is very, very powerful. It doesn't let people out. It seeps into the broader conversation because the mainstream media covers it, right? Because it's something theoretically insane or something that a presidential nominee said, so they're going to cover it. So in your experience, like, I mean, this is my fear is that like what I experienced, you know, this weekend, or what these folks in Springfield, like, Trump is the alpha of this, right? He has done this. And when he tweets, "I hate Taylor Swift," right? Like, that's a message to people, right? Like, the Proud Boys are back. The KKK showed up. And so I think that there's a part of us too that has to say, like, no, no, no. Let's be clear. If Trump starts to push back and says, "You're the problem with democracy," you don't have to say, "Well, but let me tell you," you go, "No, no, no, no. You are it, pal. You are it."
Yeah. And it all goes back to the part of it is the great replacement theory, right? I mean, that's the underlying kind of thread here is it's all tied together, right? It's all like the Hispanic invasion of Texas led to the El Paso Walmart shooting, the great replacement theory about Jews invading us, that led to the Tree of Life synagogue shooting. These are all things that were quoted in the shooter's manifestos. And so all of these narratives sort of tie together. I mean, and you see it, and Trump repeats them in different ways, right? When he talks about immigrants poisoning the blood of the country, which is also what of a Hitler reference, to now we're devolved into people eating pets, right? And people believing it. So I think it's just, I think it's something that I think is going to take some time, because all of these people have been led to believe that these are actual things, that all of these immigrants are causing the crimes, right? And the reality is, yes, it's one or two bad apples that are happening. I don't dispute that. But the majority are actually here just trying to find a better way forward in life, right? And by the way, the Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, I mean, they're legal residents there. It's not like it's part of the illegal problem.
Well, and as I noted, I think maybe in the last show, they are working in companies that are big financial supporters of Governor Mike DeWine, right? Mike DeWine has a personal connection to Haiti. I believe he opened a school there, right? And so this is just another example of like, it's just like they all went to spine removal surgery, right? And just had it pulled out. So, Joe, I mean, look, I am always hesitant to ask someone who knows, you know, how MAGA operates to treat it like an anthropological experiment, because these are individuals, but they are under the sway. So give us a sense of when you hear the dogs and cats piece, like how does that spread like wildfire? Why is it so able to take over so quickly?
And as someone who used to spew bullshit like that, I can tell you, because these are folks, good folks, decent folks who are scared. And it's so easy to play upon people's fears. And that's what's been happening now for years. I don't mean this to sound bad, but the truth is, the sad truth is, it's not at all surprising that someone would try to kill Trump. It's wrong, terribly wrong. Political violence is always wrong, but it's not surprising. Reed, Olivia, you guys know, I mean, for 9 years, every day, from that day he came down that escalator, all he's done is spew hate, spread division, and incite violence. There's no public figure in America that has spread more hate than Donald Trump. He does it every day. He's like a juvenile delinquent who every single day throws a firecracker into a crowd of people.
Right.
Eventually, somebody's going to go after that boy. Again, political violence, always wrong. The point I'm making is it's not surprising that somebody would want to take him out because of what he's said and done every day for 9 years. And he's masterful, Reed and Olivia, as you know, at preying upon people's fears. I come from MAGA. I will go after Trump every day with everything I've got. I will not go after Trump supporters because I think in the main, they are good people who've been lied to and deceived and preyed upon. Though they are, Reed, they are ultimately responsible for what they've done.
Sure, of course. Absolutely. Well, look, I mean, I'm a former Republican, right? Didn't we used to believe in individual responsibility? Right? Was it that kind of thing? Like, if America was a two-sided coin, individual liberty was one side and individual responsibility was the other.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have the freedom to do what you want, but that also means that what you do might have consequences. And obviously, Olivia, we've seen over the course of 60 years, right? I mean, the guy's almost 80, that he's demonstrated zero desire whatsoever to take responsibility for anything he's done, even up until this very moment, wherever it is he is, whatever it is he's doing. And I think that you're seeing, I mean, I would say that since the debate, Olivia, you have seen Trump turn up the gas, right? I think, you know, because their reaction, his reaction to being trounced, and it was a drubbing, was, okay, to Joe's point, now I got to scare people. Now I got to go crazy. This is all I've got now, right? And I've got to hope that I scare enough white people, right, into voting for me. I got to scare enough black people and Latino people and whoever else from staying home, you know, to staying home. So, like, give us your sense. I mean, as someone who, you know, understands that world as well as anybody from a governmental perspective, but also someone like Joe who has suffered the slings and arrows of this, you know, how do you guys get up all day every day and say, okay, I'm going to do it again? Because a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of people that would do this, right, guys? I mean, we are, I don't know. Are we crazy? Are we believers? I don't know what we are. Maybe we're a little bit of all of it. But Olivia, how do you do it every day?
I mean, it is exhausting. I'm not going to lie. It can be emotionally draining to kind of watch this happen over and over again. And I think Trump, you know, he thrives on hate. That's what it is. He thrives on hate and fear mongering. That's the only thing he has. And that's his main tool in his kit. And I think you're absolutely right when you talk about that. I think that's how he plans to drive the vote, is just to continue to scare people. You know, they tried that in the summer of 2020. Remember the ads when they were talking about, like, Antifa and everything in the communities during Black Lives Matter? I mean, they did those ads on purpose, the law and order narratives that obviously now we look back on. And I mean, they're so completely hypocritical given how Donald Trump behaved, especially when it came to January 6th. But the issue is that words do matter. And they lead to consequences. And I think we are in an era where political violence is increasing. And the reason that I think we remain sort of here is because we can't give in and we can't give up. Right. Because we cannot cede to these people who are focused on continuing to sow this division for their own political benefit. Right. And I do believe that there are more of us than them. It's just, the thing is, though, is that they have some very loud voices and also have the help for people that are running massively large social media platforms who are enabling some of these things every single day. We're seeing it. I'm not going to call him out by name, but we saw a pretty atrocious post recently where he sort of threw out some things that I think were very irresponsible and reckless. And so I think when I get up every day, I mean, I feel like almost like my job hasn't changed from my time when I was in government, because I really was driven to protect the American people and from a national security and homeland security way from that aspect. But I feel like I'm still very much in that space today because of how dangerous the situation is, and how the longer it continues, the more people get radicalized, the harder it is going to be for us to really kind of come together and unify and actually, you know, work together for the greater good of the country.
So, Joe, let me ask that, because I mean, I think that it, to your, as you said at the top of the show, it's very, very close. You know, and I think that all of us that can do our part, you know, are doing our part. But, you know, the sense I get, or, you know, my belief, I should say, is that when we beat Trump, that will be massive, but it's not going to be quiet. Right. I mean, we should not expect, he didn't go quietly into that good night 4 years ago. He's not going to do it again this year. But also that if you maybe have cut six of the Hydra's eight legs off, but it's not like he's going to go anywhere. And I think MAGA has seeped pretty deeply into the GOP's DNA.
It's the party. Yeah, it is the party. Reed, you're spot on. And just know, we know this. If he loses every single state and he loses by 50 million votes, he will not accept the result. If he loses a close electoral defeat, he will not accept the result. He will never accept the result again. And that means most Republican voters will not accept the result. And again, they began to lay the groundwork for this when Biden put his country first and decided not to run again. I'm bombarded every day for the last couple months. It's rigged. This is a rigged election. They imported this new candidate. So that's a problem. And if he loses, it doesn't matter how he loses. Look, the context is we have two major political parties in this country. One is a MAGA party. It's not a wing of the party. It is the party. And that's not going to change even if he loses, I don't think. But I'm old and I'm dark.
I agree with that. I think step one is we defeat Donald Trump. But I think this is a movement. And I think that we have a long way to go. I think this is a longer term problem.
No. And as Joe, as you probably, you know, as well as anybody, right? I mean, the people who have built this for 50 or 60 years, who put billions of dollars into this, are not simply going to fold up their tents because Donald Trump loses on November 5th, right? They'll find somebody else they think they can shove through the car wash, right, to make more palatable in, you know, whether or not those are 2026 or 2028 or whatever it is. All right. Guys, before I let you go, and thank you so much for giving me your precious time because I know we're all on it. Olivia, where are you headed next and where can our folks find you online?
I think that I'll continue to go to the various battleground states. I am traveling west more just because I am from the Southwest and I have family in Nevada and spent a lot of time traveling in the Southwest region growing up in Texas, in El Paso. But yeah, so stay tuned. I think there is a great effort on the ground that is growing. So there is a growing infrastructure at the state level with Republicans who are leading this effort. And so I think for people like me and Joe, I know it's important for us to go there and have their backs and just be there in the trenches with them as much as possible and support them. And I think that's the powerful thing about this movement. For me online, I mean, find me on social media. I'm still on X. Hanging on despite sort of the environment there. So I'm on X at Olivia Troy, and then I'm also on Threads and on Instagram.
Joe, how about you? Where are you headed and where can we find you?
You can find me at Walsh Freedom on Twitter or any other platform. I'll be in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania this week and next week. And then like Olivia, just going wherever in whatever battleground state that we can provide value. This thing's going to be really close. We're dealing in our specific lane of potential Republicans for Harris. That's all we're focusing on, trying to move a few thousand of these folks in every battleground state. That'll make a difference.
Right. And let me just say this to the folks listening. Folks like Joe and Olivia have put everything on the line for this, right? And if Joe and Olivia can travel the country and deal with the slings and arrows, both literally and figuratively, that they've dealt with, then I'm asking you all to do your part. And that doesn't mean I'm asking you to go door to door. And that doesn't mean I'm even asking you to leave your house. It does mean that you have an opportunity to do something. If you have a Republican friend that you think doesn't like Trump, might like Harris, talk to them. If you have a Democratic friend who's not thinking about voting, get them out. If somebody's not registered, get them the form. You can do all that, of course, at jointheunion.us, because that's where I am going to be out on the road. I got North Carolina, I got Michigan, I got Arizona. We'll have all that stuff available. As always, gang, you can find me on Twitter and TikTok at Reed Galen, on Threads and Instagram at Reed_Galen USA, on Substack at The Homefront. And for those of you listening on the Lincoln Project podcast feed, thank you so much. Please go on over to The Homefront. Follow us, listen, rate 5 stars. Joe and Olivia, thank you so much both for being here and for all you're doing and all you will do in the next 7 weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Reed.
And everybody else, we'll see you next time.